Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called for an end to the senseless cycle of violence in the occupied Palestinian territory and Israel. His comments during a special meeting of the Security Council in New York came amid continuing rocket fire from Gaza into Israel and airstrikes on the Palestinian enclave, the most serious escalation between the two sides since 2014. Describing the hostilities as utterly appalling, the Secretary General warned that hopes of coexistence between Palestinians and Israelis were being pushed even further to the horizon. The conflict had the potential to unleash an uncontainable security and aid crisis, Mr. Guterres said, and to foster extremism, not only in the occupied Palestinian territory and Israel, but in the region as a whole. Staying with Gaza, where efforts have been continuing to secure humanitarian access to the enclave for the UN and its partners, amid growing alarm over the deteriorating situation there. The Israeli authorities closed the Erez crossing in the north of Gaza and Kerem Shalom in the south a week ago, according to the UN humanitarian wing OCHA. In response, UN humanitarian coordinator Lynn Hastings appealed on Sunday to the Israeli authorities and Palestinian armed groups to allow deliveries of fuel, food, medical supplies and humanitarian workers immediately. In a related development, the UN World Food Programme, or WFP, announced on Monday that it has started to provide emergency support to more than 51,000 people in northern Gaza. The cash vouchers are for people who now need assistance for the first time and others who were already receiving help but who had to leave their homes because of the violence. WFP representative and country director in Palestine, Samer Abdeljaber, said that for people who have lost or fled their homes, one of the most pressing needs at the moment is food. He added that food is available for the time being and many shops are still open, including those the World Food Programme has already contracted for its regular e-voucher support. The UN agency expressed concern that the closure of crossings into Gaza may soon cause a shortage of basic commodities, pushing up prices which are already increasing because farmers are unable to reach their land. Now to efforts to tackle discrimination against the LGBTIQ+ community and a reminder from the UN refugee agency UNHCR that same-sex relationships are illegal in more than 70 countries. In a call for an end to the daily abuse and indignity faced by lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex and queer people, Filippo Grandi also warned that in 6 countries, couples of the same gender face the death sentence. He urged countries to keep their doors open to LGBTIQ+ people in need of refuge and added that for many, the discrimination starts at home. This was the case for UNHCR's first trans advocate, Bianca Rodriguez, from El Salvador. She was held at gunpoint, abused by her own mother, and bullied out of school because she was trans, the UN refugee agency explained on the International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia. She now works to ensure fair laws for people who are harassed because of their sexual orientation or gender identity in her country, and she will continue to protect and advocate for LGBTIQ+ forcibly displaced people around the world, Mr. Grandi said. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
John Grant. We have John Grant on the phone, folks.
Hey.
A little.
Hey, Mike.
John, how is?
Yeah.
It is. Let's see. Lake Charles, St. Charles, Louisiana, had 12 inches of rain in one day yesterday. Today,
wow.
We probably, in the last 2 days, we probably had 2 or 3 inches. It's like a monsoon. We got 7 days of rain ahead of
wow.
us. Wow. Yeah,
those bayou areas down there are going to be wet, boy. Wow. Yeah.
It's wet up here, man. I'm telling you. How's it in Pennsylvania?
Well, we're pretty dry. I need to go out and water my garden today. I haven't done it today. Yeah.
Oh,
we got the tomatoes and all the good stuff, you know.
Yeah. It's been so wet. We have to wear a rain suit and boots to go out and garden anywhere out here. I mean, it's a mess. It's a real mess.
Oh my. I'm sure that that wet is coming our way. It tends to come our way. Yeah.
Yeah, it's coming up from the southeast.
It's moving north to the
radar.
Northeast, probably. Yeah.
It's too bad we can't do that in other places. Do you have your New York? Do you have listeners? If you're not familiar, John Grant is our one only contact in Kansas with the New York Times.
Well,
I mean,
I'm going
to
go downstairs.
It out here.
Downstairs, yeah. But I haven't.
Oh,
yeah,
God,
I read
I'm sorry.
It. Yeah. No.
Okay, good deal.
It's just a little logistic
okay, you can
issue
move around.
Yeah.
Okay, good deal.
Yeah. But,
the gray light.
I'm sure it's going to be wet here soon.
Well, the hot news, even in Kansas, has been, listeners, it's not just the weather. It is... what is the United States' response to, I mean, it's even permeating the right-wing media out here about the bombing going on. That, man, this thing with Gaza and East Jerusalem and evicting these Palestinians who I guess are Israeli Arabs. I guess that's the actual word for it. They're citizens of Israel, but they're Arabic. And they're being evicted out of Jerusalem, parts of Jerusalem, and some people say that these, the poo-pooers, I call them the poo-poofies, the poofy people, they say, well, this has been in court, they've been fighting this in court for years, and everybody knew it was coming, that they were going to kick these Israeli Arabs out of their homes in Jerusalem, I believe. And it's much ado about nothing. And now they're bombing both sides.
Oh, it's incredible.
Bombing the populations.
Asymmetrical situation,
Well, I mean, a lot of people don't realize that the Iron Dome. The so-called Iron Dome. I don't know how they say the Israeli government or military sources say it's 90% effective. Jennifer Lowenstein, who is communicates with me, she's my contact with people in the in that. On the other end, they're saying, well, it's notorious. Hamas rockets are notorious for being not only inaccurate, but half the time they're like high grade pop bottle rockets. I mean, they do make a lot of boom, and they
might exactly like a mortar or something. What I've read is, the last time they had a war with Gaza, over 70 days, they sent so many missiles. Well, they've sent exactly that many in like 3 or 4 days. So they've been stockpiling their missiles. And one of the things the Palestinians are doing, apparently, Hamas, I guess, for the Iron Dome defenses, they're coordinating shooting 100 missiles at one time, which totally, partially discombobulates the Iron Dome, and so some of them will get through. They've killed something like... 5 or 6 or what is it? a number of that order of Israelis, whereas the number
right.
of Palestinians killed it was up like 200-300.
It was like 190 2 days ago.
I got it. I got the number somewhere. I have to find it in the paper here. Yeah.
But you know the thing. One thing I've noticed mm-hmm. over the weekend, and it's amazing. This sick thing. I feel sort of sick when I watch it because it's like, why am I watching this? You know, it's sort of shock and awe time. You know, takes me back to Bush 2 did. You know, in Iraq. And they're dropping these buildings, and one of them had the BBC. I got it from the BBC. The BBC said Al Jazeera and Reuters and AP, Associated Press, they blew up the building that had the offices for the news media in
Gaza. They're that arrogant. Yeah, the Israelis are that arrogant. It's incredible. You have to understand the context of this. You have 4 years of Donald Trump and, Jared Kushner's, quote, peace plan with the Saudi Arabians and the Arab Emirates and whatnot. Basically the Jared Kushner peace plan returned Israel to its, original colonial origins of, from 1948 on, in which, obviously the Palestinians were turned into, as the word now is, prisoners. They're prisoners in their own country because the Israelis had the support, certainly, of the Western world because of the Holocaust and all that. And the Palestinians were pretty much dismissed in this equation. And so here we are, and the Kushner peace plan, and the Donald Trump's view of people like the Palestinians, which he let us know when he referred to people from shithole countries. He doesn't have much respect for quote losers in history. And, of course, Kushner's family, the Kushner family, is personal friends with Benjamin Netanyahu's family. And so here you have this situation that's created over the last 4 years in which Israel feels like it has carte blanche to do anything it wants with these people. And given the past, it's gotten him where he is. Of course, he's facing criminal bribery charges in Israel. But as we know, war and blowing things up, we even know that from Bill Clinton, when he bombed a Sudanese pharmaceutical factory when he was having difficulties with, what's her name, and the blue dress and all that stuff. War is good for B.B. Netanyahu, and Joe Biden, who's now sort of grooming himself to be the FDR of the 21st century, the same way Herbert Hoover lost the presidency, both houses of Congress in 1 4-year term, Donald Trump did the same thing, and, Hoover was replaced with FDR. And here, we have Joe Biden becoming the FDR for the 21st century. But as far as this progressive issue goes, he has done virtually nothing. He said the best thing that he said was basically, please, could you maybe stop doing this, ceasefire, maybe, no demands. The members of Democrats in Congress, many more than in the past, are saying, well, this has gone too far. Something needs to be done. You can't support a country that does this to a people. You just can't morally do this, right? And so I think it's coming to a head. And what Joe Biden's going to, you know, Joe Biden, you know, realizes that this is a sort of a third rail for American Democratic politics, that, you know, he can't come out and demand that Netanyahu stop bombing these folks because, you know, Netanyahu will probably flip him a bird, and then how powerful does he look? It makes him look weak. You know, he'll be down there in the streets with us, you know, pissing and moaning and getting nowhere. And so he doesn't want to be there. He wants to be powerful, and so he's restraining himself from saying anything about the outrageous, asymmetrical immorality of this situation. You know, what I read today is that Netanyahu and the Israeli Defense Forces, you know, highly sophisticated military lethal destruction capacity, is focusing on these hundreds and hundreds of miles of tunnels that the Gazans have built underground, and concrete and whatnot, trying to, you know, there's just too many of them to crush them all. So they're wow. hitting choke points, they called, and blasting the hell out of choke points to either imprison people underground or else to destroy their capacity for moving around. And the Gazans are saying, well, wait a goddamn minute here. You know, you say Israel has a right to defend itself. Well, hello, Palestinians have a right to defend themselves. And if it takes creating hundreds of miles of underground tunnels, you know, and, you know, rockets that basically are randomly controlled. This reminds me, frankly, I don't, you know, of when I was in Iraq at a base in Fallujah. I may have mentioned this before, but I'm on the satellite phone talking with my wife, and I can hear, you know, I know what a mortar sounds like, crunch, 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 you know, and I can hear them going off. And I look at this guy, well, wait, what the hell is that? He says, don't worry about that. They can't hit the side of a barn. You know, he says, you'll hear them. You'll hear the pop. And he said, no, this is a soldier told me this. You hear this pop go off, and then you hear, Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar. You know, it's a pretty crude system, and their guidance system is basically Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar, you know. Now, it's a sad situation, but that's where they're at. And, you know, it seems to me that the United States is an enabler here totally of Israel. And Israel, with certainly the Donald Trump administration, their view of the Palestinians is, as I suggested earlier, they're losers. You know, and in the Donald Trump world, the Benjamin Netanyahu world, and even the Mohammed bin Salman Saudi Arabian world, losers don't cut it. Losers are losers, you know. Yemen is a loser vis-a-vis the Saudi Arabians, and a shithole country, you know. And so that's the position we're in. We've enabled this brutal country, Israel, to crush these folks in some sort of final thing, you know. And it's really terrible to watch, you know, because, you know, if the United States has any, you know, morality at all, it should realize that, sure, the Palestinians, you know, they have a certain edge and a certain sting to them, and they can cause damage, they can cause deaths, they've caused, you know, under 10, I think, Israeli deaths. But the asymmetrical unevenness of it is the issue, and it's apparently only going to get worse because Netanyahu is not paying any attention to Biden's modest request to please stop, you know. And so where it's going, we'll have to see. You know, but it's very disturbing to me,
that's
for a lot of people.
That's based on your latest reading of the Times and other sources. It's not going to.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no. There's no possibility of peace right now, huh?
No.
They can't just stop it.
No, it doesn't. And Netanyahu has basically said, fuck off. We're going to clean these people out. We're going to destroy Hamas finally. And
the Israelis said the same damn thing four years ago when they were doing the same shit happened. I mean, what is the truth?
Well,
I mean, what I'm saying is it's
escalated since then. You know, Hamas
blowing up the news media buildings.
They've done that sort of stuff before. You know, even U.S. troops they shot at the Palestine Hotel in Baghdad, which was full of reporters. You know. I mean, this is not a new thing in modern warfare. You know, you shoot the messenger. You know, and you're basically intimidating the press. In other words, hey, you're certainly. That's like when I was in Baghdad. I talked to this brigadier general with the Bremer's gang, and you know, and we were there on a peace mission, if you will. And there was this general, and I'm talking with him. I says, well, you know. He says, yeah, you can photograph anything you want. And I looked at him. He says, yeah, go ahead. You know. Hey,
really?
You know, if you want to take your goddamn life in your hands, sure, go out in there and photograph. You know, you have the right to. But, hey, you may be dead, pal. You know, he sort of looked at me that way. Well, knock yourself out, man. Go photograph what you want. You know? But, you know, the disdain for the press is very real amongst the military, especially these days when everything is so furtive and secret and whatnot. So, you know, the press is, you know, there's a target on the press.
Well, I was walking these buildings being, you know, systematically blown up, dropping these high-rise apartments and,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, and I'm thinking,
it's like
God,
a demolition.
They're just going to turn
like
it into
a demolition of a building.
Yeah, it's unbelievable the accuracy of these. I don't know what they're missiles. I guess they're missiles, or
bunker busters or whatever they call them. And there is, they do claim that they will make an announcement that you know this building at 102 Abdullah Street is going to be blown up and destroyed in a half an hour. Get the hell out.
Jesus.
And so they'll, I mean, they claim they're doing that. But, you know, who knows?
It's more, you know, it's like enabling the endless war, supposedly. You know, the so-called president in exile and his son-in-law. If this doesn't sound like some oligarchy, you know, I mean, remember, listeners, they're going to end endless war. Well, they didn't. And it's almost like they're trying to sabotage any foreign policy that Biden, old Joe, is trying to do, could possibly do. To me, it's just like obvious that the old war collusion. I wonder if there is any kind of collusion. It's like, you know, between the president in exile, so-called, Donald Trump, his son-in-law, and Bibi, you know, I mean, it's like, let's just start this up, you know, and if there's any opposite, just to screw up American foreign policy, I know that sounds like a conspiracy theory. I know that, but I mean, it's just
well,
like
I don't see that as a quote conspiracy theory at all. I just see that as political reality, international political reality.
That's sick.
Now there are conspiracies in life, obviously, you know. So, but it's not a tin foil hat conspiracy theory we're talking about here. We're talking about reality. And you know, clearly Netanyahu disdains someone like Joe Biden and, you know, very much adored Donald Trump for the carte blanche that he and, you know, skinny little Jared Kushner gave to the Israelis, you know, put the Israelis in bed with Saudi Arabia and the Arab Emirates vis-a-vis Iran, you know, and torpedoed the Iran peace deal, you know, and you know, and so that's the position that Israel has now assumed. It is now an ally, although technically Saudi Arabia never did sign in on that deal that the Arab Emirates and the others did. It's very cagey about that, although it is clearly an ally of Israel in the sense of, you know, even though they're obviously, you know, Israel is the center of Judaism in the world and Saudi Arabia is the center of Islam in the world because of Mecca. But that's like, who gives a crap about that when we're talking about existence and reality and richness and wealth, power? So on the level of riches and wealth and power, the Israelis and the Saudis are totally in bed. Again, vis-a-vis Iran, the Shiites over there. And so they're quite cozy with that coalition in the Middle East, with the U.S. pulling out of Iraq and pulling out of Afghanistan. You know, we don't have the clout that we had once in that area. And Biden knows this, so Biden doesn't want to look like a chump or a patsy vis-a-vis Iraq or Israel. So he's basically very cagey. Well, kind of, please, could you maybe, oh, be nice and stop doing this, you know? Instead of, listen, goddammit, we're the United States, and we pay you $4 goddamn billion a year, and we're not going to do sanctions on you, but we're going to start pulling that money back if you don't stop doing this. Well, you know, that's the third rail of American politics. You know, so far, American Jews, you know, have a long moral history that goes way, way back, you know, and... But, you know, they're very, American Jews are very critical, apparently, from what I've read right now of what's going on in Israel and Palestine. But, you know, if the United States starts pulling back its billions, you know, every Democrat will be terrified of the prospect of that because...
Why? You
know, well, they'd lose elections. Come on. You
it
know,
makes sense.
At
oh,
what point, you know, do the Jews... Jewish Americans, Democrats, tolerate, you know, criticism of Israel? At what point do they stop that and say, wait a minute, no, we're not going with, you know, pulling back $2 billion a year, you know, as essentially a sanction on Israel. We don't go for that at all. And so I think that's the third rail of Democratic politics that Joe Biden's terrified of.
I never thought of it.
I mean,
that
I think
way.
it's a really ugly, messy business. I just got this book from the 95. I got it at a thrift shop several days ago from a rabbi, Michael Goldberg, who is very critical of Israel's, what he calls, the cult of the Holocaust. And he says, you know, that can only lead, this is 1995, of course, that can only lead Israel into a terrible, terrible moral conundrum and mess. Well, I suggest they're there. This is 26 years later when he wrote that book.
Right.
I suggest that,
right.
You know, this cult of the Holocaust has, you know, made Israel untouchable in the world for criticism, especially from the United States, which, you know, historically made it difficult for Jewish refugees to come to the United States in many cases, facilitated with the British colonialism, you know, the establishment of the Mandate and Israel in 1948, and it was not done properly in retrospect. Again, this is a very, quote, radical idea because we're examining the roots of this thing. I'm on the verge of being a real problem for many people here if I'm saying these things, you know. But it seems to me you can't understand what's going on in Israel unless you're honest about the history. I mean, I'm certainly no expert, but, you know, I can read the major dark lines, you know.
Right.
And you know, again, you have people like this Rabbi Michael Goldberg in a very serious, well-written book. This is a profound guy saying to his own people, like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, he's saying there are two fundamental stories, major narratives in the profound and spiritual level of this his people. And one of them is the Exodus, you know, Moses and all that, I guess. I just started the book, so I shouldn't too much about it. But you know, he's got a chapter on the Exodus and the Holocaust. And he's saying it's a mistake to abandon the original founding story of the Exodus in favor of this modern story of the Holocaust. And, of course, as is proper style, he capitalizes Holocaust with a capital H. It's a proper noun. It's the Holocaust. Whereas, you know, Holocaust is a term, and according to Rabbi Michael Goldberg, it means catastrophe. He translates it as catastrophe. Well, hello, I think it's the Nabka. I think that's the correct. I need to look it up to get it to correct. The Nabka, which is the Palestinian version, and that word is translated identically into the catastrophe. So here you have these two people, both of them living their lives based on these narratives of a catastrophe, you know? And, you know, we basically don't morally heed the Palestinians' idea of their catastrophe, which is going on right now. And because, you know, we've been in bed with Israel for basically my lifespan since 1947-48. And, you know, it's coming around to bite them in the ass. And we'll see what happens. It's a very profoundly disturbing story, what's going on now in Israel. But I guess I've maybe said enough before I hang myself here, you know?
Well, I just want to have you seen any coverage in all this? I mean, I haven't, that the fact that it's that Israel holds nuclear weapons and there's no accountability.
Oh, well, that's
for
a given.
Nuclear weapons.
I mean, that's a sort of a non, nobody even mentions it anymore, but of course they have nuclear weapons, yeah.
Well, wait
I
a
mean,
minute.
That's...
if you bring this up with the, if you bring this up with the Trump people, I mean, endless war, ending endless wars, you know, and the accountability in the international community of this nuclear outlaw. The state is a nuclear outlaw. There's no international treaties for this country on monitoring their development of nuclear weapons. I think Pakistan, even Pakistan and India, have.
Right.
I'll double check that. I think they are. You know, they have signed
they
treaties.
Have nuclear weapons.
Huh?
Yeah.
Iran is a member. They allow inspectors to regularly go through and check out their inventories. I mean, and the Iranians have none, but they still allow their signatories to the non-proliferation nuclear treaties. And I mean, the United Nations has repeatedly passed resolution after resolution. They were the Security Council was meeting over the weekend about this. Today, our 5 minutes of news and brief from the United Nations, that was the main thing they're talking about, is this thing of they're calling it senseless violence. And I have a hard time understanding how Christian fundamentalists and the Israeli lobby.
Don't get me going on that, please. Yeah, I mean, that's totally absurdism. That is the most absurd and cynical and opportunist coalition allyship on the planet, you know, because what I've read, again, I'm not an expert, but, you know, the whole idea of revelations and apocalypse and, you know, there's the red calf, the red-haired calf is supposed to be something, and there was a story I read about the guy who was breeding the red calves. I'm not kidding. We're talking about religion. We're talking about insanity, organized insanity. In other words, religion, you taken to its extreme, is to me certifiable insanity. It's just that so many people believe the same insane thoughts that they can get away with it. But you're talking religion, and you get into that, and, you know, this explains these wars and things, because fundamentalist right-wing Christians who believe in the end times and the apocalypse and whatever the hell, you know, Revelation and, you know, the whole series of books about when Christ is going to return and yada, 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 over my head, if you will. But again, there's this symbols like the red calf and whatnot that appear into this. If I am correct, in the end times, when it's all over and, you know, the apocalypse, Israel or the Jews, put it that way, the Jews will be finished. They're written out of the end times. You know what I mean? Because they're not Christians, right? And for the Israelis to get in bed with these right-wing fundamentalist lunatics, in my judgment, is so opportunistic, because really these people are talking about the end times without Jews. These are the people that harbor the people that were in Charlottesville, Virginia, with their tiki torches hollering, "Jews will not replace us," right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty
bizarre
cultural...
And these are the people, fundamentalist right-wing people, that the Jews in Israel, right-wing, let's be fair, right-wing Likudist Netanyahu Israelis, are totally in bed with. It absolutely makes no sense. Unless, of course, you see it as allyship based on political enthusiasm. And there's no more enthusiastic people than politically enthusiastic people than people driven by religion. And so, you know, to me, it is so unsavory a coalition that, you know, anyway, that's my point.
Well, I mean, you're giving it to the listeners. And by the way,
I'm sure it's a sensitive subject. I'd be delighted to talk to you. Yeah.
There's several numbers you must one in order to listen. I know some of you are calling in on Skype. I can see the Skype number on there. You must press one if you want to visit with John Grant. Another thing that's happening, I noticed in the news around Israel, is that the Orthodox Jews a week ago they were trampling each other to death.
Stampede.
And then over the weekend, there must be a religious holiday, I think, coinciding with Ramadan on the Muslim side.
That's the thing. They're both headquartered in the same place.
And then over the weekend, they had another thing, this huge rally of Orthodox Jews, and the bleachers collapsed. you know, and it's like
people
were killed there and injured. And it was, I'm like, what? It's almost like, to me, it's like his religious hysteria. I don't
well,
see
I think,
as much
what
of
do you mean? What do you, hey, wait, Mike. What do you mean almost? You know, there's no almost here, in my view. This is religious hysteria.
What a hotbed of craziness. I mean, it's just, it's like, we give him $4 billion a year. Donnie Trump cut off funding for the United Nations. I mean, the one regulatory agency that takes care of non-proliferation of nuclear weapons that tries to, out of Geneva, by the way, to at least keep track of the people that have these nukes. This is really, to me, it's like everything that's wrong with the word imperialism just comes out.
Oh, totally.
I got to say it because I don't think people appreciate this. I mean, to me, it's like it's unbelievable. I don't see how any normal, even American, can not see through this and realize that we're being played.
Well,
and,
a lot of them, again, right-wing fundamentalists are allied with Israel. That's what I'm saying. And try to get somebody who is at the level of, we'll use your word, hysteria about religion, to get them to listen to reason or, you know, logic and all that kind of stuff. You know, you're pissing up a pole, you know, it's just not going to happen. And, you know, there's an old saying, you know, not an old saying, but a reality, that when you push someone or institutions or groups of people, you push them to extremes, so they're in extremis, there's two fundamental responses. There's a suicidal response, and then there's a homicidal response. In other words, you violently strike out either internally or externally to save yourself existentially or spiritually or whatever. Well, I think you can make a pretty good argument that this incident of the black-hatted fundamentalist Jews in Israel, and they're, you know, they've been warned many, many times that this mountain retreat is not capable. There's problems here. Well, you know, this trampling incident from what, a month ago, is, you know, you could say that's a self-destructive. In other words, your hysteria got so bad that, you know, you harmed yourself. Well, that same hysteria can be exploited or used, you know, to violate somebody else, you know, and, you know, strike outward, if you will. And the irony or the sadness or the tragedy, hypocrisy or whatever you want to call it, of this reality in Israel is these far-right fundamentalist groups are tied with Likud and Benjamin Netanyahu, totally in bed with them. There's one right-wing group, party, that is so outrageously racist, it's laughable. And they're with Benjamin Netanyahu. Well, the thing is, these, I call them black hats, because they do wear black and hats. They're exonerated from being in the Israeli Defense Forces, from being in the military. In other words, these are the most hysterical forces pushing Israel to extremes of suicide or homicide, if you will, and they are not. They're allowed to avoid the military. You know, like, wait a minute. What is wrong with this picture? You know, the most intense people driving this country are not, you know, they don't have to serve in the military, whereas all the secular people do. You know, it's like, wait a minute. Well, you know, wait, whoa. What's going
right.
on here? You know what I mean? You know, and I don't know. There's so many problems with Israel like this, but you can't touch the place. That's the problem. Because, again, I hark back 1995 to Rabbi Michael Goldberg's very profoundly and heartfelt book that I've been reading, questioning this cult of the Holocaust, you know, using the Holocaust with a proper noun with a capital H and the Holocaust versus, you know, the lowercase Holocaust, which means catastrophe for African Americans and slavery and whatnot, and Native Americans and American genocide. I mean, those are Holocausts. Those are very real Holocausts, but they're lowercase Holocausts. And you know, you can't. And this is what Rabbi Goldberg was writing about. You know, this is a trap that you're falling into. You're going to lead to trouble. 1995. Well, they didn't heed Rabbi Goldberg, and they're in trouble. I think you know.
Yeah.
It's desperate now, and. You know, every time there's an iteration of a war with Gaza, especially where Hamas is headquartered, and the ineffectual Palestine Authority in the West Bank, every time the cycle gets bloodier and bloodier and bloodier, and this time is follows that, you know, that curve, if you will. Well, each time there's a learning curve that the Palestinians get more and more and more effective. Now, compared to Israel, they're never going to catch up to Israel. But if they become more and more effective and they really, you know, start causing damage, at what point does Israel really, and I very guardedly use this term, at what point then does Israel manage, because that's the word we should use, manage a final solution? What do you do at that point? You know, this is where Rabbi Goldberg was suggesting he didn't want to go, you know. What do you do when it's untenable, you know, that there's no way out? Biden is ineffectual. He's sitting there. He can't do a damn thing. What do you do when the hatred is at such an intense and hysterical level? I don't know. God, it's
well. I mean,
it's amazing.
I mean, what is the what are there? Are there? I mean, I don't know. What's Veterans for Peace doing? Saying it. What is the
Veterans for Peace?
Peace,
you know, we're at the school. You go out. You know, and there's just something to be said for this. I think there's demonstrations in Philadelphia here on the streets outside the Israeli consulate, which is appropriate, you know. But, you know, and
yeah.
I have friends, Nadia Benjamin and others, Colonel Ann Wright, who have been arrested on boats that tried to reach Gaza from the ocean, you know, and the Israelis stopped them and they killed one person on one of these boats. You know, they would land from helicopters right on the boats with guns. And it's like, wait a minute, isn't this our ocean here? I mean, we're on the coast, Gaza, you know. This is our ocean. How the hell are you deciding who can arrive by boat and who can't? Well, Veterans for Peace has a ample force of people who, you know, this is their life. They live their life to do this stuff. And I'm sure there'll be more of this stuff. And I'm sure they'll be ugly. As I say, this can only escalate. I mean, I'm involved with the police now here, and we're talking about de-escalation training, and de-escalating tactics and all this kind of stuff. Well, de-escalation has been thrown out the window here. This is all about escalation, and we're watching it every day. And unfortunately, our president is impotent. He's not doing a damn thing. And this is Joe Biden at his worst. You know, he understands the power that he has and the limitations of his power. And he will not take a moral stand that in some way diminishes his power. So he's going along saying, fine, you know, just, hey, could you be a little nicer, you know, please? You know, it's embarrassing for me. You know? At the same time, you know, he wants to do good things domestically. He just did, apparently yesterday, something he did on taxes that, you know, some return of taxes that the poorer families are going to get $250 or $300 for each child that they have, you know. All good, all good. You know, as I say, FDR stuff for the 21st century. But, you know, one of the prices he's paying is, you know, wanting to be reelected and wanting to win in 2022 and not lose the Senate and House. And so he's basically sitting on his hands morally, I'd say immorally sitting on his hands and saying nothing. I don't know how else to see it. I think it's a very, very tragic and very, very dangerous situation that can only get worse. And so, I tell you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of shocked about the whole thing. And that's why I said, you know, I almost wondered if it was like, let's be real. I mean, these people can send email to each other. They could call, you know, on the phone and call up.
Totally.
Let's bomb, you know, we're going to evict these people. We're going to, have these parades on the so-called Temple on the Mount and at these religious landmarks. And it's good. And we're going to evict people and stir up. And, you know, it's like this will screw up Joe. Yeah. You know, I can't help but think that this is just another effort to sabotage any positive stuff that could come out of the government. And it breeds, you know, it really does. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a victim. I subscribe to that for many years, fear the government, you know, fear the police state, you know, fear, and then I had to work with the government and it changed my attitude. I began realizing there is this libertarian thing about all government is bad. It's very anarchistic, stupid shit. Mm. But there's so many Americans that if they're not fundamentalist Christians, there's so many of them out here that are libertarians, but they never do anything. They never enter, you know, when it comes to this situation, people like Charlie Koch, who's the leader of these libertarians, you know, and these mercers, the billionaires, you know, they and their followers, and they have many followers, let's face it, everybody from Steve Bannon on, you know, all these people, when it comes to Israel, they just fuck it, let it go, whatever happens, we can't do anything. And I'm like,
well, I think at that point, it's the me, it's all about me aspect of libertarianism, you know, and you know, I just want to take care of myself, my family, my people, and screw everybody else. I can't now. And well, I know my wife just gave me this long dissertation note. I can't deal with it right now.
We're not in 5 minutes. We only have 4 minutes, but I mean, it is horrible. It's put the people, you know. I mean, I watched it over the weekend, and when they bombed the Associated Press and the BBC, I just thought it was so ironic that here's the BBC reporting that the news media building in Gaza was and they showed it. It's filmed. It's like a controlled demolition, and Reuters was filming it outside the building as they blew it up. Right. Like, okay, they got notice. They got advance notice, but to me, the stupid word optics. The optics were so, it was so repulsive.
They don't seem to care about those optics. That's what I'm trying to say. The United States, i.e. the, quote, liberal United States that we have now under Joe Biden, they disdain it. They don't feel they have to give it any fealty. They don't have to give it any respect because, they basically pushed the United States out of the Middle East, the embarrassment of the Iraq War, thanks to George W. Bush down there in his bathtub in Texas, and all that gang, that we are now a joke, if you will, pardon the expression, in the Middle East. And, they know, they have our money, they have our support, because of oil and Saudi Arabia and all this, and they're in bed together, and they're very fine. We can handle it by ourselves. Thank you very much. We appreciate all the guns and the supersonic aircraft you've given us and all this and the money. And please keep the money coming, just shut up and leave us alone, And that's the posture. We're basically a paper tiger to them now,
God damn.
Is that fair or what? I don't know. To me, and also the right wing in America, in a case like Israel, and how... let me move here. I can't help, and this is personal, I can't help but associate the right wing, and I think of Trump and Kushner and all that gang. Them when they hear someone like me, wringing my hands and, getting all upset over this. And I can't help but think of the guy's sign down the street, Trump, make liberals cry again, It's like, oh, yeah, let's blow up some more Palestinians so the liberals will cry and will feel so good, Now, that's twisted. But I think there is something to it,
I think the commonality with basic red state and blue state people should be: we just need to cut off all funding to the Israeli and especially weapon contracts. I mean, just cut it off and say you can't deal with this regime. And I said it earlier. I said, I think we ought to give it to the. Give the $4 billion to the United Nations and say, here, if you want to be a liberal, give the $4 billion every year to the United Nations and say, here, you go deal with it. You got my support.
Right. In other words, apply that $4 billion to making peace instead of war. Hell.
What a day with John Grant.
Okay, take care.
Jesus Christ. All right. John Grant, sorry callers, you called in late, man. Sorry about that.